Good morning.
Yeah.
Just first of all, I apologize, but I'm a little bit under the weather today, and I wasn't sure whether I should come at all, but I wasn't able to reach anybody, so I decided that I would come. I'm just going to stand a little bit further away, and hopefully everything will be fine. So let's turn our attention to the topic that we began yesterday, and that is the topic of tiltol minat sad, moving something that's muktza by means of some intermediate object. So again, imagine if these papers were muktza, so I'm not touching the papers themselves, I'm touching the Gemara, and I'm moving the papers, or I'm sliding the papers off. That would be an example of tiltol min atzad. By the same token, let's say that there's something muktza on your floor, and you want to sort of put it out of the way, so you could use your broom to put that muktza object, you know, out of the way. That would be a case of tiltol min atzad. Or if you got a package, right, and you want to sort of bring it into your house so that it shouldn't be exposed on the front porch, so you take some sort of a broom or a cardboard or something like that, and you scoop it up, right, and bring it into your house by means of, right, the dustpan or something like that, that would be tiltol min hatzad. And tiltol min hatzad is sometimes permitted and sometimes forbidden. The basic rule is that when the tiltol min hatzad is the tzorech davar hamutar, if it's for the purpose, if the object being served by this tiltol min hatzad, it is a non-muktza object, so then the tiltol min hatzad is permissible. However, if the object which most benefits from the tiltol min hatzad is a muktza object, is the muktza object which is being moved, right, so then it would be forbidden. This tiltol min hatzad would not be allowed. So that means, for example, that package that you got at the front door, it would not be so simple that you're allowed to move it with a broom, because the main purpose of moving that package is that the package itself, which is muktza, should be safe. So that's tiltol min hatzad letzorech davar ha'asur, right? It's for the benefit of something which is muktza on Shabbos, and therefore it's not allowed. However, if you, if you wanted to clear space so that people should not trip over the package in the dark on Friday night, right? So that would be more likely to be considered tiltol min hatzad letzorech davar hamutar. It's not for the purpose of the muktza object, it's for some other purpose which is more permissible on Shabbos. And so that's kind of what we're going to discuss. We're going to see the sources of this in the Gemara. So let's take a look over here. The Gemara is commenting on the Mishnah, which says that you're allowed to use some sort of a skewer in order to pick up anything, to spear food or papers or something along those lines, you're allowed to use this skewer. In other words, even though the skewer is a kli shemalachto le'isser, it's ordinarily used for cooking, right? But since you're using it at Sorech Gufo, you're using it for a permissible purpose on Shabbos, it's going to be allowed to use it. So the Gemara is interested now in this idea of using a skewer to move around things that perhaps otherwise would not be allowed to be moved. And the Gemara tells us, Tana Rabbanan, Paga shetamna bitaven. Let's say that you had an unripe radish. And in the olden days, if you wanted the radish to ripen, you would put it underneath some dirt, and that would accelerate the ripening process. Now, I'm leaving aside all the malacha issues here. Is it zorea? Well, if the dirt is specifically designed for the ripening and you didn't intend for it to take root, so then it's not an issue of zorea, it's not an issue of kotzer. Is it bona or soser, because when you take out the radish, you're making holes in the sand? Again, let's assume that those issues are non-issues over here. There's a way to get around all of them, and we'll focus on the muktza issue. When you pick up the radish, you're going to cause some of that sand to move, and therefore you're indirectly moving the sand by moving the radish. So Tanu Rabbanan. The radish is mutter, it's food. So paga shetamna. It's not your intention to move the sand. Is it a psik reshe? Malacha shena tzicha legufa by muktza. I'm not sure how relevant those concepts, which really ought to apply to malachos, are when it comes to muktza. But definitely there is a school of thought which says, let's limit this leniency of tiltel min atzad only to a case which matches exactly to the case in the Gemara. And if you wanted to do that, then maybe you would end up coming out with saying that as long as you wanted to move the muktza, as long as it's davar hamiskavein, maybe that should not be allowed. So that, I think that's a worthwhile thought to keep in mind. Meaning the question is, are we only going to permit tiltel min atzad in a case that matches all of the details of our Gemara? Or are we going to expand the permissibility? We'll say that perhaps tiltel min atzad is permissible even in situations that differ slightly from the situation in our Gemara. And that's really what I'm going to want to try to prove at the end of today, that that the poskim and the rishonim seem to view tiltel min atzad as permissible beyond the narrow parameters that are discussed in our Gemara. So let's take a look. Paga shetamna b'teven, if you put this radish right underneath straw, or charara shetamna b'gachalim, a roll that you hid inside of coals in order that it should stay warm. If some of the roll or some of the radish is sticking out above the surface of the straw and the coals, then mutar l'taltala, you're allowed to pick it up. Now this goes without saying, because theoretically, you're not even going to cause the coals to move. You can delicately pick off that roll without any of the coals even tumbling right into the hole that's left right by the roll's departure. So this goes without saying, right? You're moving the roll without causing the coals to move at all. However, imlav, if it's not migula miktasa, in other words, if the roll is entirely concealed, right, by the surface of the coals, then asur l'taltala, you're not allowed to move that roll. Why? Because you would need to put your hand through the coals in order to reach the roll. And by putting your hand through the coals, you're causing now the coals to move around. And so that would be a problem, right, of tiltel muktzah, of causing the muktzah coals to move. Rabbi Elazar ben Tadai says, I can come up with a permissible way to take the roll out from underneath the coals. Tochavin bikush o bikarkar, you can stick a skewer through the coals into the bread or into the radish. Vehein minaros may a lehen, and now the coals are moving on their own. Right? You're not directly moving them, it's tiltel min atzad. Right? You're using the skewer to move the coals, and you're not doing it with your hand, and so that should be permissible. That's the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Tadai. Amar Rav Nachman says, Halacha ki Rabbi Elazar ben Tadai, this is how we pass in according to Rav Nachman, although Rav Nachman may take back his psak in a few minutes. So the Gemara says, Lemeimra, do you mean to say, the Savar Rav Nachman, Tiltel Min Atzad, Lo Shmei Tiltel, that Rav Nachman means to say, that Tiltel Min Atzad doesn't count as Muktza, that it's permissible, Muktza is not allowed, Tiltel is not allowed, and Tiltel Min Atzad doesn't count, right, as Tiltel, so therefore it is allowed. You really mean to tell me that that's Rav Nachman's position? V'ha Amar Rav Nachman, didn't Rav Nachman say, Hai Pugla, if you have this Pugla, which is a triangle-shaped vegetable, what does art school translate it as? Pugla? We've got an art school here that translates pugla. Oh, radish. Okay, so radish. Milmala limata, if the wide part is on top and the narrow part is on the bottom, in other words, if it's right side up, shari, you're allowed to pull it out of the dirt. However, mimata limala, but if the radish is upside down and the narrow part is facing upwards, the wide part is underneath the dirt, then asir, it is forbidden. So let's just for a second, at this I really do need everybody to draw the pictures of these two pogos. Right, so for 32, here's a couple of extras. Oh, this paga is a fig.
La paga, right?
Excellent.
La paga. Remember this? No. When you need something too early, you say la paga.
Okay, so basically, right, the first pugla, the right side up pugla, looks like this. It's a triangle which is pointing downwards, bisected horizontally, right, by the line of the dirt. That is the right side up pugla, the pugla which is the it's an upside down period, exactly. I bisect it horizontally right by the line of the dirt, and that is the case where you're allowed to take it out of the dirt. However, the one which is forbidden, this one over here is forbidden because when you grasp the narrow end of the pugla and pull it up, you're going to cause the dirt that's on top of the wide end to be dislodged. And so even though that's tiltol min atzad, you're not actually touching the dirt with your hands. You're only moving the dirt, right, by means of the pugla, right? But nonetheless, Rav Nachman seems to say that it is forbidden. And the Gemara's answer basically is, Hadar ba Rav Nachman mehahi, Rav Nachman retracted one of his two positions. Now, I don't know which position he retracted, but the Shulchan Aruch paskins that tiltol min atzad is permissible. And in other words, that even if Rav Nachman thinks that you're not allowed to pull this second pugla out of the ground, but halacha l'maisa, you are allowed to pull this pugla out of the ground because it's tiltol min atzad. You're not directly moving the dirt, you're doing it indirectly through the agency of the pugla. Now the problem is that 34, why is it called tiltol? Why is it tiltol at all? Okay, you're moving something mukta, right? Why is it min atzad? Because it's indirect. You're not using your hands.
You don't move dirt when you move it up and down.
Yeah, theoretically you can take this radish out of the ground without dislodging any dirt. This radish is impossible to take out of the ground without dislodging the dirt that's resting on its wide edges. Neither of them are completely in the ground, right? But one of them you can take out without dislodging any dirt. The other one, it's bound to dislodge some dirt, even though you're not doing it directly. So the Rosh paskins that tiltol min atzad is allowed, but then he points out that there's a Gemara earlier which seems to give contradictory evidence. The Gemara over there says, let's say that a person, chas v'shalom, passes away, and you need to move the body out of the room where it's in, right? For whatever reason, it's not the kavadik, you know, to leave it there, or it's rotting away. Whatever the reason is, you need to move the body. And the Gemara says, so I have a good idea. Let's do tiltol min atzad. We'll take two beds. We'll roll the body off the first bed onto the second bed, and we'll move the first bed to the other side. We'll roll it off the second bed back onto the first bed, and so on and so forth until it's out of the room. Or just carry it with the bed, right? That seems to be a good solution. You're not carrying the body directly, but you're carrying the bed, and then through the bed, you're carrying the body. And the Gemara, the Rosh even, says this is incontrovertible. The Gemara says it's not allowed. If you really need to move a dead body on Shabbos, the only thing that you can do is you can put like some sort of food on top of the dead body. The body becomes a busis now for the food, and then you can carry it because the body now acquires the status of the food which is on top of it. Busis will leave for a different point in time, but what's clear from this Gemara is that tiltol min atzad doesn't work when it comes to this dead body. It's just you're not allowed to move it through the agent, you know, through the bed or through rolling it off the bed. The only thing that works is putting that piece of food on top of it and making it into a busis for something non-mukta. And so the Rosh is troubled. He says, on the one hand, our Gemara, right, seems to paskin that tiltol min atzad is permissible, and that Gemara earlier on seems to paskin that tiltol min atzad is forbidden. And this is the origin of the distinction which the Rosh draws. He says, okay, in our Gemara, the reason that you're moving things is letzorech d'aver hamutter. You're moving the dirt, not because you care about the dirt moving, but rather because you want to get the radish or you want to get the fig out of the ground. So that's why it is permissible. However, in the case of the dead body, right, the reason that you're doing tiltul min atzad is in order to get the dead body someplace which is more respectful, more bekavadif, right, for it, and therefore it's going to be forbidden, because tiltul min atzad is only mutar letzorech davar hamutar, and not letzorech davar ha'asr. That is the compromise of the Rosh. Now we get to Alvin's point. What about the in-between cases? The first in-between case that the post can talk about is what happens in a case where you're not moving it, letzorech, the actual food, nor are you moving it, letzorech, the dirt. You're moving it, letzorech, mikomo. Right? The package that's on your porch is blocking people's access to the house. So you're not interested in the package, and you're not interested in something non-mukhsa. You're interested in the space that the package occupies, right, being unblocked. So is that considered more similar to the case of moving the mace? Because after all, it is not letzorech davar hamutar. Right? Or is it more similar to the case of the pugla, because it's not letzorech davar ha'asur. It's letzorech something ephemeral, letzorech something which is in between. How do we treat it? Do we say that the case of the pugla is the rule and the case of the mace is the exception? Or do we say that the case of the mace is the rule and the case of the pugla is the exception? That's the question which the Magen Avraham raises. Yes? Why is the package muktzah? Either because of its contents or because of nolad or it came from outside the tchum, whatever it might be, packages sometimes... our mukta. So, the question is, do we allow that for things other than kavod hamei?
The reason you're putting the food on is to give you the extra
tips to move it. It might be that we only permit this for kavod hamei, because that's like a very high... So there's a different lambdas for why moving the mace I take kikar atino kiz mutter? Right, I think folks can say that b'chol, any time it's a makom atzorech, we'll permit it I take kikar atino. But maybe the idea there is that your tiltol is now misyaches to the mutter thing and not to the asr thing. But it is applicable beyond just the case of mace. So the Magen Avraham talks about what about letzorech mekomo, and at first he's like, you could make an argument that it should be not allowed because it doesn't resemble, right, the case of pugla. Again, this case is similar because you're not moving the mukta directly. This case is also similar because you're not doing it letzorech davar ha'asur. That you're not moving this mukta for the purpose of a mukta object. But at the same time, it's different from the pugla because nor are you moving the mukta for the benefit of a non-mukta object. You're just moving it for the benefit of clearing up the space. And according to the Shulchan Aruch passes very clearly that it's mutar letzorech mekomo. So this is what I'm wondering about. 43 over here. You fill in the blanks. For A, B, and C, choose either the word pugla or the word mace. And for D, choose either a mutar or asur. So we infer from the Shulchan Aruch, that pugla is the rule, right, and mace is the exception. Right? In other words, that everything which doesn't resemble mace will be allowed. That's the inference I get from the Shulchan Aruch, because moving something, tiltul min atzad, letzorech mekomo, isn't really exactly the same as pugla. But the Shulchan Aruch still says that it's allowed. So that means that pugla we can expand, even to cases that don't directly resemble it. Right? If mace, right, which is the exception, mace is the only case where we'll say that tiltul min atzad is not allowed, because there, the tiltul min atzad is actually, right, for the purpose of the mukta object and not for some in-between purpose. In other words, any case that isn't similar to mace, right, is gonna be allowed. That's my inference from the Shulchan Aruch. this brings us back to Rav Nissim Karalitz's suffix in scenario number 4. So you want to move the, you want to be metaltel the rat min hatzad, so that it should fall onto the $500. Now again, you know, the best thing to do with those $500 is to move it with your foot, right? Because that's permitted even l'tzorech davar ha'aser. If you're not using your hands-free, right, is mutter even l'tzorech davar ha'aser. But let's say you haven't practiced, you're not so fit in terms of moving money with your feet, and so, you know, that's not really an option. So you want to just, you know, put the rack on top of it. So here, in this in Karel, it says, in some ways it's similar to Pogla, and in some ways it's different from Pogla. On the one hand, it is similar to Pogla, because you're not moving the rack for the purpose of the rack. Just like in the case of Pogla, you're not moving the dirt for the purpose of the dirt. You're moving the dirt for the purpose of something else. And here also, you're moving the rack for the purpose of something else. And so in that sense, it is similar to Pogla. However, it's also different from Pogla, because in the case of Pogla, the something else that you're moving the dirt for is a davar hamotar. In this case, where you're moving the rack for the money, the something else that you're moving it for is a davar ha'asur. So again, I would make the argument that passively, right, the same way that letzorech mikomo, even though it doesn't, you know, hew exactly, right, to the details of Pugla, but it is still mutter, right, because Pugla is the rule and only mace is the exception, only something that resembles mace 100% is going to be forbidden. Maybe in Rav Nissim Karalitz's case, we'll say the same thing. Even though it only resembles Pugla in one way, but is different in another way, but because it isn't exactly like the case of mace, perhaps we will permit you to roll that rack off the garbage can lid and use it to save your $500. Because in the case of the mace, you're doing the tiltel min hatzad for the object that is being moved. Over here, the tiltel min hatzad is not for the object being moved, it's for a different object. Other object happens to be muktza, but you're not doing the tiltel min hatzad for the other object.
Worse.
Yeah, because you move, again, in one case you're moving it for, what's that case of Pogla? You're moving something, so it takes from something that's out there. You're moving something that's usur, or something that's usur. It's both.
The question that I'm wondering about now is, like, what is the reason behind it? I haven't thought about this yet. What is the reason that tiltel min hatzad is permissible, right? But letzorech davar ha'asur, it's forbidden. But it almost makes it sound that, you know, that when you stand to benefit from this tiltel on Shabbos, so we're going to permit it. But when you don't stand to benefit from the tiltel on Shabbos, so then we're going to forbid it. So if that's the lamdos, then you're right. Then this case of moving the rack for the $500 would also be forbidden because you're not actually benefiting from the tiltel on Shabbos itself. Now, this is something that Achronim talk about at great length later on when it comes to tiltel mechama litzel, when you're moving a klisha malachto le'isser. In order to rescue it from getting damaged, well, it's malachto le'isser. So you're not going to benefit from this tiltel on Shabbos, and therefore the tiltel becomes sort of like a preparation for the weekday. And perhaps that's why it's not allowed. Yeah, there's big discussions about what counts as benefit on Shabbos. The basic argument that you need to apply is, if we counted this as a benefit on Shabbos, is there anything that would remain usur? That's the question. There are certain things that if you said this is allowed, then what's not allowed? Right? For example, the Chazon Ish talks about this. He says, everything theoretically could be a toy for a kid. Right? Right, exactly. So he says, maybe nothing should be mukta, because everything can function as a toy. So there, because obviously using something as a toy for a kid doesn't really count as just a be-all and end-all, right? That makes it a smukta. little bit dehydrated yesterday also, so I want to make sure that Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam Shehakol Yehiyeh B'Dvaro. Someone please remind me to make a brain process afterwards. So let's move on to scenario number 5. This is Dr. Reifer already alluded to this yesterday. The question is, what is the proper procedure basically for taking out the garbage on Shabbos? And here we have, this one's pretty common, after you ladle out most of your challah into the serving bowl, there's burnt stuff and a bit of edible stuff left in the challah bag that's still on the crack pot. So you want to throw the challah bag out, but it's got a hole, it's messy, and you don't want to carry it over your kitchen floor all the way to the garbage. So instead of carrying the challah bag to the garbage, you want to move the garbage pail to the challah bag. Is this allowed, or is this not allowed? So the basic question is, right, are the things in the garbage mukta, or are they not mukta? And the key question is not, are the things that are in the garbage right now mukta or not mukta? The question is, during Bein Hashmashos, which is at the time that the garbage would acquire the status of a basis, was the contents of the garbage mukta? In which case the garbage pail became a basis, ledavar ha'asur, and it becomes mukta for the entire Shabbos. Or during Bein Hashmashos, where the contents of the garbage pail not mukta, in which case the garbage pail is not a basis ledavar ha'asur, and it would be permissible to use on Shabbos. Right, so for sure you get out of all the problems if you make sure to take out the garbage, right, during Bein Hashmashos, right, or sorry, before Bein Hashmashos, right, and that way the garbage pail is not a basis for anything because it's empty at the beginning of Shabbos. That definitely would solve all the problems, but what happens if you didn't take out the garbage during, you know, at that time? So then, is the garbage pail a basis ledavar ha'asur and forbidden to move, or is the garbage pail not a basis ledavar ha'asur and it's permitted? So we're going to take a look right now. The Poskim mentioned this far in a different connection. They talk about what happens if you want to move your candelabra. Right? Once Shabbos began already. So you decide, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put my challah roll onto the candelabra. So now it's not only a basis for the flame, it's also a basis for the roll. So they are usually the equation that we use to determine what it's mainly a basis for. Right? The equation is, which is more valuable, which costs more money, which is more important to you if you have to give up one of them, which one would you sacrifice? Whatever the equation is, let's talk about value for a second. And the roll is more valuable than the flame. And so based on the ordinary equation, we would say that the candlesticks are buses for the roll and you're allowed to move them. But the post can say, because the candlesticks were designed, right, to support and enhance the flame, that sort of trumps this idea of value, even if the thing that they're designed is of lesser value, because they're designed to support that, it becomes a buses. However, that only applies when the thing it's designed to support is actually resting on it during Bein Hashmashos. So then we can make that sort of equation and say, oh, it's a basis for the thing it was designed for, and not a basis for the thing it wasn't designed for. But if there's nothing resting on it at all, a candlestick which you didn't light on, so then there's much more discussion. It could be that a candlestick which you didn't use that particular Shabbos, that you're allowed to move it. The purpose of the candlestick for that Shabbos is to be a noy for the house. It's meant to decorate the house, to make it look nicer. And if you figure out in the middle of Shabbos that it'll look nicer if you move it to a different location, so then perhaps, right, again, the Chazanish would disagree with this, but many posts can say that you would be allowed to move that candlestick to a different location in the middle of Shabbos. So again, if it's not actually holding the flame, it's not actually holding the garbage, then it doesn't become a basis, even though that's what it was designed for. Yeah, but I move my garbage pail. I move the garbage pail all the time. If there's a lot of garbage in the living room, I'll put it in the living room to make it easier, right, to clean up the living room. If the garbage, like the challah bag, right, is not by the counter, I'll move it next to the counter so that I can dispose of the challah bag without making so much of a mess. If I have a lot of garbage on the table, so maybe I'll move the garbage pail to the table. So it's definitely something which I move, and I may even have in mind, right, to move it on Shabbat. The only problem is if the contents of the garbage pail are muktzah, and were muktzah during Bein HaShemashos, so then the garbage pail becomes a basis, and even though I intended to move it, right, but it just doesn't work. You can't intend, right, to move something which is a basis. The Davar HaAser, Yichud, and Machshava don't really help for that. Yes? Right, why do I throw out my challah, like the challah leftovers? Why do I throw them out on Shabbos? Right. When I lived in Washington Heights, so there were a lot of leniencies that I relied on, because if you didn't get rid of food right away, then bugs would come. Now in Kew Garden Hills, Baruch Hashem, I think that somehow the kedusha of the neighborhood is sort of keeps bugs away, many types of bugs, so we don't really have those same issues here. I have to think about that. I'll talk about it with my wife, and why is it exactly that we like the kitchen to be cleaned up after the daytime meal? Because we do like the kitchen to be clean. But like Shal Shodis, right? A lot of people Shal Shodis, they leave the whole table messy until after Havdalah. So Alvin is saying, if it's in the kitchen on the back, burner of the stove or whatever it is, so then what's so bad about leaving the challah until after Shabbos to dispose of? I use it in a crack pot. I take it off the crack pot, I put it onto the stove where the burner's off. Right, and then I want to just take the bag out and put it into the garbage. I have to think about why I dispose of that on Shabbos. The fundamental question is, when is it that garbage is considered to be muktzah, and when is it that garbage is not considered to be muktzah? Right, when is it that something unusable is muktzah? When is it not muktzah? When is something that most people don't use, right, or that nobody uses muktzah? When is it not muktzah? So let's take a look at the Gemara here. This is really the starting point. The Gemara says, Machat shel yad. You're allowed to take a sewing needle, little ba es hakot, in order to use as a tweezer, sort of, and get the splinter out of your skin. So the Gemara says, Shalach le Rava brei derabba. Rav Yosef. Rava sent the following shaila to Rav Yosef. Yilamdeinu Rabbeinu, teach us, Rabbi. Machat shenital harara. What happens if the sewing needle lost its hole? Right? O uktza. Right? Or what if all that's left is the hole and you're missing the point? Mahu. What's the halacha? Is it mukta or is it not mukta? A holeless needle. Amarle. Rav Yosef answered, Tinisua, it's an explicit Mishnah. It's our Mishnah. It says in our Mishnah, Machat shel yad, litol ba es hakot, that you're allowed to use a sewing needle in order to get a splinter out. V'chimat yichpas le'lekot, be'nekuva, le'bein she'ena nekuva. What difference does it make to the splinter whether the needle has a hole or whether the needle doesn't have a hole? At the end of the day, a holeless needle is just as effective for removing splinters as a needle with a hole. And if that basically justifies moving a needle, then you should be allowed to move even a holeless needle because it still is suitable for removing splinters. Now the Gemara is going to reverse this psak at the end of the sugya, but let's follow the gyrations of the Gemara before we arrive at the conclusion. Esve, says the Gemara. Challenge. In other words, I'm going to bring you proof that you should not be allowed to move this needle once the hole fell off. A Mishnah says, Machat shenital charara o uktza, if a needle lost its hole, tahora, it's tahor. What relevance does tahara, tumah v'tahara, have for Shabbos?
That's what the question of the
Gemara. So the basic issue is this, right? There's two categories, things that are kalim, things that are not kalim. And there's many nafkaminas, whether or not something is a kli. If it is a kli, so then if it was mekabel tuma, right, it keeps the tuma so long as it remains a kli. If it stops being a kli, so then the tuma disappears. Right? The basic rule is that tuma is attracted to chashivos. And when something sort of becomes insignificant, so then the tumah disappears. It just can't hold on there. There's nothing of interest left for it there. Maybe it's one explanation that I've seen in some mafarshim. So again, the basic idea is, if it is a kli, if it's still a kli, it's still tameh. If it stops being a kli, it stops being tameh. By mukta, we also have an afkamina. If it is a kli, so then you're allowed to move it around on Shabbat. If it's not a kli, then it's muktza machmas gufo, just like a rock or a branch, right, or a coin, right, or anything along those lines. It's not a kli, it's muktza machmas gufo. So the inference is, if for tuma, right, this broken needle stopped being a kli and therefore became tahora, the tuma disappeared. So for muktza also, you should say that the broken needle stopped being a kli and it should be muktza machmas gufo. That's the inference that the Gemara wants to draw from this idea that machach nital harara o uktza is tahora. So the Gemara's response is, and this is a very interesting discussion, the Gemara says, Tuma, a Shabbos karamis. Are you sort of attacking Shabbos from Tuma? Are you comparing Shabbos to Tuma? There's different standards for Kalim in Hilchos Tuma than there are in Hilchos Shabbos. What would account for that? Tuma, kli ma'aseh ba'inan. Tuma has this requirement of kli ma'aseh, which means something which is suitable for the function it was designed for. If you manufacture a sewing needle, it's manufactured for the purpose of sewing. Once it stops being suitable for sewing, it loses that designation as kli ma'aseh. I mean, in other words, it stays being a kli, but it's not a kli ma'aseh. As opposed to Shabbos, the concept of ma'aseh has no relevance for Shabbos. On Shabbos, the issue is it a kli or is it not a kli? So we could basically say that this holeless needle is not a kli ma'aseh because it can't serve its original function, but it is still a kli, and therefore it's not going to be muktza. Tuma kli ma'aseh ba'inon. But the Indian Shabbos, when it comes to Shabbos, midi, yichazi, ba'inan, all that we need is something which is usable for some sort of function. The Hanami, and this needle too, chazya lemishkila ba kot, it's suitable for taking out splinters from a person's hand. That's Abaye. Sorry, not Abaye, that's Rav Yossi. Taking out splinters, I believe, is allowed. Right, so the infection is different. There's a Gemara later on in the Masechta that talks about three things that really ought to be asur midrabanan, but we're going to permit them. I think this is one of them. that usually there will be some sort of Issur Rabbanan, like Davar Sheino Miskaven or something like that, but we're going to permit it over here because of the pain and discomfort that the person's experiencing. What if you know for sure that it's going to bleed? Then I'd have to check it out. So Rava says, man the most, the kamosev, the one who made this challenge, the one who compared Shabbos to Tumah, Shapir kamosev. I actually think Rava says that it's a good challenge, it's a good comparison. Nidaleinyan Tumah, lav manahu, if it's not considered a plea for Tumah, leinyan Shabbos nami, lav manahu, for Shabbos it's also not a kli. I don't buy this kli maisa thing, that as long as it's any type of kli, it's tamei. If it's tahor, it means it's not a kli at all. And for Shabbos also, right, if it's tahor, it means it's not a kli at all. Okay, machlokas, Abaye, sorry, Rava, Rav Yosef, right, they're fighting. Can you compare Shabbos to Tumah? Can you not compare Shabbos to Tumah? And that's going to be the status of this whole list, our needle. Gemara going again, challenge Mesei. Macha, bein nekuva, bein she'in nekuva, mutar the taltala b'shabbos. Whether this needle has a hole or whether it doesn't have a hole, you're allowed to move it around on Shabbos. It's not mukta. Lo amru nekuva. The only time that we said that a needle with a hole is privileged more than a needle without a hole is only le'inyan tuma bilvat. So it seems to be open shot, right? That there's a difference between Shabbos and Tumah, and the needle without the hole should still be ois mukta. No, Gemara says, Tirgama Abaye, Aliba de Rava. And Abaye jumps to Rava's defense and interprets this braisa consistent with Rava's position. I remember still from fifth grade, they asked my fifth grade rabbi, maybe it was my sixth grade rabbi, one of those two, probably my fifth grade rabbi. Right? So now we had this someplace else, Tirgama Abaye, Aliba de Rava, and he said, this proves, right, that the Amoraim are always seeking the emes, right, because we're willing to defend, right, the position that we disagree with, right, we interpret, save our, you know, the one that we're arguing with from an attack, right, and it just shows that the point over here is that we're all seeking the emes, and we're not just seeking to lift ourselves up and to defend our own position. So that's Tirgama Abaye Aliba de Rava. Abaye now is going to defend Rava against this Mesei. He says, Begolmi Askinon. We're talking here about unfinished needle. We're not talking about a needle that was completed and then the hole broke off. Rather, we're talking about the needle before the hole is punched, right, in the head of the needle. That's what a golem, right, is. A golem is, in Talmudic language, is an unfinished piece of matter, an unfinished piece of material. And the reason that this golem is considered to be non-mukta is zimnin demimlach alayu umashvi luhumana, because sometimes, right, the manufacturer decides, you know something, this needle, I'm not going to make a hole in it, and I'll sell it as is, maybe for removing splinters. And because sometimes people will take this unfinished needle and use it as it is, therefore it's already considered a kli for the purposes of Shabbos. Aval. For Tumah also? No, it says Loy Amru Nikuva Ela Le'in Tumah Belvad. In other words, that we only require it to be Nikuva for Tumah. Because by Tumah, the way that Tumah works is, if I'm building something, right, Tumah is very sensitive to my thoughts. Right, so let's say that I'm making a bookcase, I'm making pottery, or I'm making a needle or something like that. So it only is Mekabel Tumah when I'm finished with it. But there are many, many light levels of finishing. I could have something which I decide I'm going to sell, you know, rough, and I'm not going to sand it down. And it could be that I'm going to sand the bookcase down. And it could be that I'm going to coat it, you know, with some sort of, whatever you call the varnish. Right? And it could be that I'm gonna etch, you know, engravings in it. And the rule when it comes to Tumah is that whenever I decide that I'm ready to sell it, that's when it becomes Mekabel Tumah. So the same thing when it comes to this machat. If I think I'm going to put a hole in it, so then it's not a kli for Tumah until I put the hole in it. If I change my mind and I say, you know something, I'm going to sell it as is, so then it becomes a kli right away. So when we say, Loy Amru Nekuva, Ela Le'inyan Tumah Bilvad, what we mean is that since most craftsmen, right, are not ready to sell their needles until they put the holes in the needles, Therefore, most needles cannot become tame until they get their hold. But for Shabbos, we don't care about the craftsman's particular thoughts and when he intends to sell it, as long as it is sometimes people choose to use these needles as they are, even if this particular craftsman has not made that choice, that already makes it a kli for the purposes of mukta, and you're allowed to move it around. Yes?
When it comes to needles and tablets, you want to see the possible purpose of the hole in the needle and tablet, then there was a difference in the needle that has a hole in the needle that has no hole.
Well, a hole is for sewing, right? So it's not really... Right, but so the hole is absolutely pointless on Shabbos. The critical question is, right, is a needle... So the question is it a kli or is it not a kli? Is it mukta or is it not mukta? And... Yes. Okay, so let me just take a step back. When Poskim talk about what is a kli and what is not a kli, there is a lot of different criteria that they suggest. I came up with a list of 8 or 9 different criteria. You know, that some of them are like far out criteria, like poll 100 people in the street, if they say it's a kli, right, then it's a kli, right? Or, you know, somebody suggests that, you know, that maybe a kli is something which is very processed, right? It's very unnatural. It's gone through a lot of iterations between the natural world and its present state. There's sources that indicate that something which has a base keyboard, something which is capable of storing things inside of it, storing liquids inside of it, is more of a cleave than something which is flat. There's a discussion. Something that's reusable, right, is more of a cleave than something which has only a one-time use. Like, then there's a big discussion. Are candles, matches, one-time use? Are they reusable? So the relevant point over here is that I'll tell you the 3 different ways that Post can formulate it. One way that they say is something which is ra'oi, something that is suitable for use, is a kli. And the Gemara actually uses that word. The Gemara says, le'inyan Shabbos, midi dechazi ba'inan. For Shabbos, what we care about is something that is chazi. Chazi comes from the word ro'eh or ra'oi, something suitable for use. Right, that's the definition of kli for Shabbos. Anything that's usable is a kli. That was the definition that the Gemara propounded earlier. Then, elsewhere, not in our Gemara, Poskim use the term omeid lekach. In other words, it's not enough that it's suitable for use, but it needs to be sort of destined, right? Waiting to be used with bated breath. It's a hard criterion to apply, because you kind of put yourself into the shoes of the kli. Right? Is a table waiting to be used with bated breath? Is it omeid right lehishtamshus? Right? Is the pen waiting to be used with bated breath? Is it omeid right leksiva? And how do you know right whether it's omeid lekach? And so one way to quantify it a little bit more is the question: is this something which is often used? Is it something which is rarely used, or is it something which is never used? And that, I think, is probably the strongest of these 3 criteria, and that's really what the Gemara says next. The Gemara says, "Aval heicha denital charara o ukta." When you have a needle and the hole of the needle is missing, so then adam zorka lebein givutao. People just throw it into the garbage, right? They throw it together with the scrap metal, and even though it is chazi, it is ra'oi, it is suitable for use, but nobody uses it, right? The entire world, right, the general practice is that once the needle breaks, even though, yes, you could theoretically still use it for removing splinters, but nobody does that. Everyone just throws it into the garbage, right? And so we basically have, right, 3 different types of needles. There's a needle which is not yet completed. That needle is not mukta, because sometimes the craftsman who's making it decides to use it as is. So it's not mukta, because people do sometimes use it. Then you've got the needle which has the hole, which is for sure not mukta, and in fact it's even by mekabel tuma, because it is a genuine kli masa, and it's perfect and complete, in all senses of the word. And then you have the needle where the hole fell off. And that needle, the Gemara says, is not mekabel toma, it stops being a kli, and it also is mukta, because now, even though it is suitable for use, but nobody uses it at all. Everybody just throws it out. And when you have an object that everybody just throws out, that object is mukta. So you can... Even though it could be used on Shabbos, but it doesn't matter. That could be used as the earlier criterion, but now the criterion is not could be used, but rather is sometimes used, or is somewhat frequently used, and the needle does not pass the muster when it comes to that requirement. So now we're going to get into questions, right, of what's the deal with garbage. Again, you can imagine already, right, when you throw something into the garbage, how often, right, do you take things out of the garbage? Very, very rarely. So you would think that everything, right, that's in the garbage, right, should have the status as being Adam Zorka Lebein Bruto. So you just throw it together with a scrap metal and therefore it becomes Mukta. However, it's not so simple. The monkey wrench in the sugya is thrown by the Rashba. And the Rashba asked the question that somebody asked earlier. The question is, are we talking about a needle that broke before Shabbos? Or are we talking about a needle that broke on Shabbos? Remember, right, last week on Thursday, that we discovered that there's a difference between things that broke before Shabbos and things that broke on Shabbos. The Chaye Adam, his theory about Muksa, that Shabbos is meant for implementing the plans, before Shabbos is meant for coming up with the plans, and so the rule basically would be that if you plan to the best of your ability, and then something happens on Shabbos, so it's not going to be considered Muksa. It's only if, on Erev Shabbos, you already were not planning to use this, that's when something is more likely to be Muksa. So the Rashba says, in our sugya also, the needle only becomes mukta if it broke on Erev Shabbos. And you threw it in the garbage on Erev Shabbos. But if it broke on Shabbos, you did your best, you planned. During Bein HaShemashos, right, this needle was still a kli. And therefore, perhaps, if the needle broke on Shabbos, right, we should say as long as it's chazi, even if most people throw it away, it becomes, that it stays a kli. Okay, so we're going to have to think. We don't paskin like this Rashba when it comes to broken needles, but we do paskin like the Rashba when it comes to other forms of garbage. In other words, that many types of garbage we paskin that if they are thrown out on Shabbos, and during Bein HaShemashos they were permissible, they were kalim, or food, edible food, so then on Shabbos they can't become mukta. So you might have a garbage pail that's full of garbage, of things that people never reuse, like broken plastic cups and leftovers of food and stuff like that. As long as all of that was thrown out on Shabbos, it's not mukta, and you can move it wherever you want. But if this stuff was thrown out before Shabbos, you didn't prepare, you didn't plan to use these things on Shabbos, so then they are mukta. And what that means basically is, right, again, we'll talk about it a little bit more in detail next week, that if your garbage pail was full of garbage from before Shabbos, so all of that garbage is mukta during Bein HaShemashos, because you were not planning to use it on Shabbos. And if it was mukta during Bein HaShemashos, then your garbage can is a basis for this mukta stuff, and it cannot be used on Shabbos. But if you... But if all the garbage is from Shabbos, and during Bein HaShemashos that garbage can was empty, so then the fact that you put in new garbage on Shabbos, right, doesn't make this garbage can into a basis, because the garbage that's thrown out on Shabbos is not mukta. So that's more or less, I think we're going to see a little bit more in detail Mir Kashem next week on Monday. Have a wonderful Shabbos.
I'm going to take out a shot.